we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
With the implosion and collapse like a tin can under an elephant, the submarine last week, after being warned not to go, people were telling the people that owned it not to do it because it was too risky and it was ill-advised because of the poor construction and design of the company. They went ahead and went down to depths that were intolerable, and looking at the Titanic, ended up down there with it. That's where we have been the last 3+ years, and the people in charge have been ignoring centuries and millennia of science and data, and the implosion of the submarine has been like our culture under the weight of the pressures of reality. Jordan, with that, any thoughts on the stupid that we were subjected to last week with the news?
I think the only thing that was interesting at the end was when the Coast Guard said they kind of had heard a explosion within an hour or two of the lost communication. So it seems like that should have been something that was discussed. And instead, it seems like we were used in a way it was used in a way for a story as opposed to a story, meaning they were searching for something that had already been pretty well proven that it was not, that was already done. I thought that was pretty interesting and shows you that at least the media cycle was more interested in utilizing it for, I guess, ratings benefit than they were about the families that were affected. But
distraction seemed to be the whole message when they knew the result.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question. Once they couldn't find it on the surface, that everyone knew what the end result was. I think that's the thing that's just bothersome to me, that it was utilized in that way. But that's pretty typical. And it always makes you question what are they trying to cover up? And when I say cover up, what I mean is cover up from the standpoint of making you look somewhere else while something else is happening. It's a diversion tactic, so it doesn't surprise me. I think there were a lot of things that happened last week that, from a release of stuff for our current president's interactions to all of the above, that is pretty concerning. And we were all focused on some other shiny object.
Yeah, I think Durham's report on the handling of President Trump's campaign was, I thought, Representative from Florida, Gates, I thought his questioning and critique were right on target. There's clearly a two-tiered level of justice in this country, and you and I are not in the same as our president and the elite. And it was sad that this guy, Durham, like his predecessor, Barr, and the former FBI director, these guys, they're just trapped in their own system, and they refuse to repent and be part of the solution. But several things like that have been going on in our culture for decades and decades. And now we're to a point where you have a $34 trillion debt, and that doesn't even include unfunded liabilities. And you're starting to understand the dramatic need for repentance, because this is not going to end well. It's going to be like that submarine. There's going to be an implosion at some point because of stupid decisions all the way along.
And exactly.
So with that, I think it'd be worthwhile in talking about a stupid decision would be this Substack article about how the spike protein is associated with cancer. It was extremely long. I thought it was well worthwhile because it got into the weeds for guys like you and I. It really got into the weeds on the evidence for it. It was put out by Dorless Carp, D-O-O-R-L-E-S-S-C-A-R-P, on June the 11th. And the title of it was SARS-CoV-2 Spike Protein, comma, Binding Affinities to Associated Markers and Cancer Pathway. And it was it's an hour-long read, but it is very insightful as to things we've known and things that I didn't know until reading this, but it really gets into the weeds and addresses several things. Of course, the easy ones that any doctor out there has heard of is the BRCA gene, the P53 gene. There's several mechanisms by which the protective things the Lord's given us are downregulated or upregulated, whichever in the reverse direction it should be, in order to propagate cancer development. And I think I'll read the one paragraph conclusion of the first part of it and then get your take on it real quick. It is evident that spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 has good affinity towards BRCA1, CXCR4, and certain other proteins too, and importantly, higher affinity than ACE for most of the protein. So the ACE receptor is what we've known about that this spike protein binds to. But anyways, it has higher affinity for these other things. Appropriate functioning of these proteins is necessary to maintain a healthy cell microenvironment. Alterations in the expression level or functioning of these proteins due to the bound spike protein of novel SARS-CoV-2 may result in tumor acceleration in the basic stage cancer patients. From our results, it is clear that when cancer patients, especially of lung and breast, are affected by SARS-CoV-2, they have a higher probability of acceleration and progression of cancer, since the lung and breast cancer proteins taking into consideration show high binding affinity with the spike protein in comparison with the ACE2 receptor. Apart from this, it is important to note that SARS-CoV-2 may even lead to the death of advanced stage cancer patients, in particular of lung and breast cancer, since most of the marker proteins get overexpressed in cancer cells. There is also a possible chance of tumor induction in non-cancerous individuals via altering the function of normal protein. Therefore, it is obvious that the novel SARS-CoV-2 Carola isolate has better potential to induce and proliferate tumors. Novel SARS-CoV-2 can also be used as anti-cancer drug carrier. Interesting. I hope they don't do any more experimenting anytime soon on this, but the potential might be that it's beneficial in the long term if we can use it and use it effectively.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's not that surprising. When you think about that, a significant amount of cancers are caused by what, Stuart?
Yeah, the immune system being
The viruses. A lot of people don't, we all think of cancer as being, oh my gosh, why'd I get cancer? But I mean, there's a reason that they tried to do the HPV vaccine, because a lot of these, what we would call endogenous viruses, viruses that live and stay, they result in cancer. And that is, long term, an issue. And so dysregulating immune responses to viruses, or any kind of immune response, is not good. And right. So especially when you have something that's so, as I would say, just on every level, it's amyloidogenic. It is immune dysfunctioning when changing CD4, CD8. It is everything you don't want in a viral pathogen, all wrapped up into one and given to us on a petri dish from a lab, in a sense. But
yeah, and as you make the point, so you rightly make the point a lot of times, the formation of the spike protein from the shots is worse than that from the natural infection.
Yeah. And it's worse in a way that they didn't really even know. I mean, the way that they pseudo-urinated a lot of kind of biochemistry. Kevin McKernan's done a really good job of showing that these mRNA sequences are not just mRNA sequences. They turn into microRNA. They turn into plasmid DNA because that's one of the processes for them to make. This RNA is utilizing plasmid DNA, and then the plasmid DNA is not being removed. So again, it's a Russian roulette, or even probably worse. It's more like all the chambers are loaded, and right. We don't know how bad the outcome is going to be. But it's, I don't know what game that is. Maybe that's Chinese roulette. But
I win, you lose.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think that's one of the reasons I think. Just a larger question on how often and why we poke the immune system. We've been talking about that for a while, but the immune system is not just this simple, organ that we know everything about, that we can just take for granted that when we mess with it, that there's going to be always benefit. In fact, one Peter Hotez in something we included last week talked about that sometimes when they make vaccines, they cause more damage than they do benefit. And that begs a question for one Mr. Hotez. How does that do that? And I tell you the answer is we've discussed it well, antigen-dependent enhancement, immune dysregulation, all those kind of things. Begs the question, well, maybe all these things that we assumed are perfectly fine, in the 90s or 80s, when we didn't really understand the complexity and the unique nature of the immune system to fight or cause cancer, we might need to reassess whether causing that dysregulation or prompting it, poking it, is always good. And the outcomes of that aren't something that you would see within 5 days of an injection. And I think that's what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is asking for is, hey, the follow-up on these things are very short. The safety oversight is not that great. And what if we do something that 10 years down the road causes issues? How are we going to see that signal? And I would argue that we're not. I mean, we might see it, but we won't know what caused it. So,
right. Yeah. And the thing is, it seemed very interesting. Even Hotez, the eminently qualified, arrogant Hotez, was testifying in 2021, I believe, in the early part of 21, about the bad downsides of this type of technology vaccinology, the downsides of that. Back in the 60s, he gave congressional testimony about that.
Yeah, and about the RSV and rotavirus. Yeah.
And apparently back in the 60s, the scientists had an obligation, seemed to have an obligation to humanity. And knowing this, in other words, he's telling, we know that there are potential downsides. And then they just blew past all the warning signs of the last two, three years and just said, we don't care. We're going to do what we want to do, and we'll see how it works out. Well, it's clearly not worked out well. I don't know if you saw it or not, but more evidence of myocarditis. Now there are three studies that show that there is a 3.5 to 4.4% risk of myocarditis in boys that get these shots. It's insane. There's no risk to these boys, that yet they're given these shots that 1 in 20, 1 in 25 of them are going to have heart conditions for the rest of their life if it doesn't kill them. It's amazing.
Yeah, and again, there's when you talk about the risk isn't mitigated by these shots either. So, I think a lot of times we're arguing a straw man that says, oh, well, if you get the shot, you don't get the virus. And then the actuality is you get the virus, and for even the data we have shows that you stay positive longer than somebody who's not vaccinated. So, you know, exposure to spike protein longer, I would argue, is not a good thing. So,
and like we talked about with, I think it was last week in our podcast, that Walensky, the former CDC director, lied under oath many times, like all those that are in that job around her, lied many times. And then the evidence came out a week or two ago that they knew because of her emails to Fauci and Collins, they knew that there was a problem with these
very shots. Early.
Yeah, back in January of 21. It's just a lies built on lies that lead to the implosion of our culture in so many ways.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, foundationally, medicine is built upon honest investigation.
Yeah, and I think. With that, I think we'll end this session with a very important Dr. Malone yesterday in one of his posts gave a very good quote. I think we'll end this session with it. It's by Robert Oppenheimer in 1949. Here's his quote. "There must be no barriers to freedom of inquiry. There is no place for dogma in science. The scientist is free and must be free to ask any question, to doubt any assertion, to seek for any evidence, to correct any errors. Our political life is also predicated on openness. We know that the only way to avoid error is to detect it, and that the only way to detect it is to be free to inquire. And we know that as long as men are free to ask what they must, free to say what they think, free to think what they will, freedom can never be lost, and science can never regress." So with that, on America Out Loud Pulse, I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley with Dr. Jordan Vaughn, and we'll meet you on the other side of the break.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body. And now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Whether you're an independent, a Democrat, or a Republican, one thing remains true. Airborne viruses love us equally. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the advanced nasal solution Cofix RX. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. Did you know that doctors and nurses have been swabbing their noses with povidone iodine to protect from airborne threats like colds, flus, and pandemic-era strains for decades? Cofix RX took that idea and made a more complete nasal formula with lasting cleansing effects. Maybe you're traveling soon or going to an event. Are you concerned somebody nearby might be sick? Maybe the office or classroom stresses you out. Get yourself a bottle of Cofix RX nasal solution. Spray goodbye to colds and flus with a Cofixrex Nasal Solution Cleanse. That's COFIXRX.com. Save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD at CofixRX.com.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. Well, we know you because we are you. AmericaOutloud.com. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
So I was reading this weekend, I really like this website called Unheard. It's usually got very smart people that are writing some pretty good essays. And a lot of the stuff we've talked about before in regards to the techno state has come from Unheard. And there's a guy named Matthew Crawford. This is not Matthew Crawford. This is Ashley Reinsberg. But what he's talking about is, why did the USAID fund the Wuhan lab? And I think that's a pretty good question. It's a question some can't even answer because they won't even admit it. But once you get to the base of it, you realize that a lot of this work was actually done with tax dollars. And there's actually an economist I like named Hans Hermann Hoppe, but he talks about democracy, the God that failed. But that's an interesting concept. But what he basically says is, when you outsource all responsibility and decisions to the taxpayer who has no input on what the money's spent on, you're going to have some pretty dire consequences. He actually makes the argument that democracy is what has allowed big wars to happen. Because otherwise, back in the day when the feudal system was, kings wouldn't go to war because there wouldn't be kings anymore when they ran out of money. So, but in general, same kind of thing applies here. And you can take his analysis for what it's worth. I'm not saying democracy is bad. I'm just saying it sets you up for, all forms of government are imperfect. And I think it sets you up for a lot of ability to do things that are less than desirable. And when we think about why our government, our tax dollars went to China to research something that could only at this point have been harmful, we start to ask, well, how did that decision even get there? But what he focuses on is Dwight Eisenhower's final public address as president. And basically, it's remembered mainly for the military-industrial complex quote. And Stuart and I have talked about that a lot, when you talk about military-industrial complex. But contained within his speech was another stark prophecy, one which has largely been forgotten yet remains just as significant. He says, the domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, allocations, and the power of money is a grave threat, he cautioned. Public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. And I think if there's a better example of that, the last 3 years have shown you that the reason that scholars could not speak out, and there was a elite of scholars, and those scholars had one source of funding, one source of narrative, and they all seem to be in line with one thing. And I think, Stuart, it's the people that pays their paycheck, right?
Yeah, it pays their paycheck and allows them to bribe other people so they maintain their power. That's right.
So, again, I think when we think about how that has, trickled into the rest of the daily lives of people, you start to realize that real freedom of inquiry, which is what we ended the last segment on, freedom of inquiry, freedom of questioning, goes away. And so I think that's one of the reasons that you've seen the transition of medicine from an independent science to a, you know, Milton Friedman would say we made that mistake when we started taking government payments for services. Because at that point, once you take government payment for services, they seem very nice at the time, but before too long, it's government control of services and also government directive of treatments. And I think that's what we're seeing. So, you know, no other time, I think, in recent history, would have we even thought that such safe medicines or other abilities for physicians to intervene and help people could have been thwarted by the government, the politicians, the bureaucrats. And that is just, again, the outcomes of this were devastating to society. And it's pretty obvious we should have listened to Eisenhower.
No question. The people, the corruption runs deep and it's perpetual, and they keep, I mean, that Adam Schiff fool that that kept himself on the front page and also on the talking head shows for 2 years in order to make Trump look bad was caught lying again and again and again and was actually censured by the Congress this past week. We didn't hear anything of that because of the implosion of a submarine by foolish people. But once again, more and more and more stupid surrounds us and percolates to the top while more and more people are injured and killed. There's another man here in Montgomery who died suddenly. Unfortunately, healthy by all accounts, received several shots and very, very tragic ending. Hated for him and the millions of others who have similar things have happened. There was another thing that came out recently that in the past week or so about Japan and Germany having a 5 and 10% drop in or excess mortality for 2022. It's more and more and more evidence comes out that their actions have been counter to reasonable, loving, kind, and that's who they are. And they can't escape the reality of who they are. None of us will.
Yeah, it's, again, one of these issues with the first of all, the heart of man, second of all, the, you know, what these experts allow to happen. And I think that's one of the things we've talked about before is, I mean, just think of the hospital treatment that everybody was told to do. I will argue that you won't ever find a person or a doctor's name on that. Yeah. It's, you know, this is standard of care. And I always ask by whose standards. Okay. And then also the experts, and you actually should ask which expert. Because just like in any other discipline, there's lots of different experts and experts have different opinions and standards are different depending on who, you know, what's the back moral backbone or understanding or expertise of the person writing them. The problem is when you talk about bureaucracy, you get a directive from an agency and that agency's this it's not anybody human. It may have humans behind it, but those humans are not visible for a reason. And they're not visible because they don't want to be, because when they're wrong, they don't want their name associated with it. That's even, we see as, you know, Fauci or Walensky will go before and say, well, we didn't tell anybody to close schools down. And it's like, okay, you know, technically you're correct. You didn't yourself write down close schools. But what you did was the effect of that. And sometimes, it's, they do it by, you know, arm's length transactions, withholding money in the name of better care. You know, it's all, again, the scientific elites, They control the levers, except their hands are never supposedly on those levers. When they're asked about why they pulled that lever, they say, "I wasn't near that lever." So, and I think that's, we've got to have accountability, but it's hard to have accountability when no one actually, there's no evidence on who pulled the lever, but it's done that way on purpose. And so we should structure these systems that have somebody's name on it. You know, somebody should be blamed personally or whatever. I mean, it should be a vote. It should be a committee. That's why executive is not, you know, it's supposedly the place where a lot of these decisions are being made, because the decision, the buck stops here, supposedly. But when you get into these administrative agencies, they're impersonal, and the decisions they make aren't attached to anybody personally. And the people that suffer have no one, first of all, we have no one to ask why it was done. And then second of all, when somebody is suffering, they have no one to retaliate against.
That's right. It's more and more of the same. And we are, hopefully, the breath of fresh air called RFK Jr. Last week, a couple of important, last couple of weeks, he's given several interviews to Joe Rogan, and Tucker Carlson did a piece on him, and Jordan Peterson did an interview with him. But this guy seems to be a man of integrity. Now, I don't agree with a lot of his ideas, but at least he seems reasonable in his approach. And the destruction of our government, of our country, by the governmental entities like the national security apparatus and other people, it just clearly shows you that these people worship the system, and they've said it as such. They worship the system that President Xi of China is over. They wish they had the level of authority to do the things that he has the power to do, despite the death and destruction of millions of people under him. It's really a warped pathology that these people think like they think and do what they do. They really think there is no accountability, that they are the ultimate when it comes to the people in positions of authority and who counts. The fact is that we know, thank goodness, we have faith and confidence that the Lord is true in his word, that he is the ultimate arbiter. But it's very sad that these people put themselves in the traps they put themselves in, and in so doing, put us all in bad traps as well.
Yeah, I think we've got, again, it all goes back to, we've got to get back to even, you know, representative government. I think it's pretty obvious. Congressmen don't like voting on each one of these individual things. They actually are in the same way. They might act like they can't do anything, and these agencies are taking control, but they also like that they can blame it on them, because again, they don't have to make hard decisions. So,
one thing I started watching last night, and I hope we can talk about next week, and it is this movie that's come out called Plandemic 3, the people from Breitbart, but the guy that you've talked to a couple of times up in Nashville.
Highwire.
Highwire. Yeah, they put
Dale,
together.
Dale Bigtree.
Right. Very interesting. He just goes, it's once again an honest assessment of the hubris of mankind, and it's a death trap for all when we follow it. And even the people in charge think that they are succeeding, when in fact they're just digging their grave deeper.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the other thing that is truer than I've ever really realized it is, I mean, even, I think, who was it saying? I think it was Kerry Mullis that was saying, you know, once the political leaders learned that science could control people and could cause destruction and devastation, all of a sudden, and I think he said it was around the time the nuclear bomb did what millions of men couldn't. You know, it would have taken know, an invasion to bring Japan to their knees. You started to see that all of a sudden there's a totally different way to control people. And that's, you know, that's the, unfortunately, that's the heart of man. So I don't think it's going anywhere.
Yep.
And I think we have to be mindful of that in everything we do. And the problem is the coalition of more and more big governments together. I don't really care how great they act or what they say. It's the end result's not going to be good.
Yeah.
It will be. Man has shown over and over again that he is he's a prideful SOB. So.
Yeah. No question. And it just takes people with humility and integrity to be making the important decisions, whether it's in a home, a church, a government, the world, or whatever. You have to have humble people with integrity and wisdom and discernment. And I was on a positive note. I don't know if you saw it or not, but there was a state that passed the House, Ohio, in their House. They said that pharmacists must fill prescriptions, and it gives them an out for conscience. Yeah, but like if you and I write a prescription for ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or whatever, the pharmacist doesn't have the right to practice medicine. They have to do what we say. Now, if they have a problem with it for whatever reason, they can voice that, but they can't say that their science trumps our science. That's not how the system's designed, nor should it be. But that was a bright ray of hope. I hope our state legislature and every other one can pass laws like that. But I'm doubtful that the cartel that runs the medical industrial complex, including the pharmacy board, will be amenable to doing the reasonable thing in this.
All right. Well, with that, we will end this segment. I am going to come back in the next segment and talk about a couple of things that I'm seeing in the clinic that I think are of worth talking about related to kind of both long COVID and vaccine injury. And I think they are useful for a lot of people to hear about. So with that, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley, America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
In 2008, people could spend an average of 12 seconds on a task without becoming distracted. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down. Thousands of 5-star reviews proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait. We wash our nose. Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
We are fighting the ultimate fight between good and evil. AmericaOutloud.com replaces groupthink with innovative think. Well, it was Walt Whitman, the poet, who said, "Keep your face always toward the sunshine, and shadows will fall behind you." America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
So welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. For the third segment today, what I was going to do is talk through a couple of things that we're seeing in the clinic related to long COVID. And so I'll first start out by, you know, we continue to kind of understand a lot of long COVID, and the primary part of long COVID to be a vascular issue. It not only causes damage to endothelium, but sludges up the small vessels. And in sludging up the small vessels, it causes significant dysfunction at the tissue level, especially tissues that are demand oriented. Those would be things like your muscles, your brain, your vestibular system, areas that need help when they need it. And, you know, basically aren't always used in a continuous fashion, unlike things like your liver or kidneys. Given this, we have continued to use anticoagulants and antiplatelets to help these. And again, these are off-label treatments, but based on the most relevant science that we have seen in the literature, as well as doing it on our own, we have had some actual pretty amazing results. So when we add all that up, you know, we are also seeing a subset of people, and that subset of people is what I want to talk about today. And that subset of people are people that definitely have thrombotic issues going on, and in many ways also report what we call post-exertional malaise. Post-exertional malaise, again, is feeling tired when you do something, but not only feeling tired then, but feeling significantly, not necessarily significantly worse, but just as bad, if not worse, 24 to 48 hours later. And we describe that in the context of what we call local tissue hypoxia. And I usually use the example of when you usually work out, when you usually do stuff that gets you a nice muscle burn. That muscle burn is a little bit different than the muscle burn that's happening in the long COVID phase. The workout burn that you usually do if you don't have long COVID causes some burn, but the burn is kind of a signal to the muscles that, hey, let's get some more oxygen here. Let's dilate the vessel. Let's break down some of the muscle that we don't need, and let's build back bigger and stronger, or what we would call hypertrophy. And so that would be why we work out. And when we work out, our muscles increase in size. However, there's another way your muscles respond to being worked. And in that case, it is the situation that you are working those muscles out, but you are not supplying adequate oxygen. And that lack of adequate oxygen is pretty noted by the muscle. And when it's noted, the muscle responds in a almost 911 type signal. It releases a lot of things like cytochrome C, reactive oxygen species, and you know, one of the terms for this would be called cell death kinetics. So instead of a muscle being like, "Hey, we worked really hard, let's get bigger and stronger," instead it's like, "Oh my gosh, we may even never get oxygen again." And that is kind of the response we would get in a cell death kinetic or post-exertional malaise scenario. And in fact, it actually damages the muscle. The fatigue, hypoxia, and ultimately release of reactive oxygen species
cause the muscle to be damaged. And then, interestingly enough, 24 to 48 hours later, when it gets oxygen back, it has a paradoxical effect. And that paradoxical effect is what we would describe as ischemic reperfusion injury. So funny enough, when you give oxygen back to a tissue and the tissue has been in cell death kinetics, it actually causes a paradoxical effect that's basically releasing reactive oxygen species. And so those reactive oxygen species cause further burn, further fatigue. And it is kind of that cycle that really describes the long COVID kind of post-exertional malaise phenomenon. But in addition to that, there's a subset of patients, and I'm going to describe them in kind of basically three things that I find in them. One, a lot of them are more vaccine injured initially. They have a sudden onset in their symptoms, and that sudden onset initially is usually lower extremity changes. So a lot of times that could be lower extremity swelling, lower extremity weakness, lower extremity heaviness, followed by kind of a POTS or tachycardic syndrome. And then after that, usually in the preceding 3 to 4 months, develops lots of kind of weird insensitivities. And those insensitivities could be weird rashes to foods, to stomach upset. And again, those are the kind of, you know, constellation that we were seeing. And recently I've added to that, and I think it added to it because of the research that we've been looking into, is we've seen a real correlation between people that are, for a fancy word here, hypermobile. But hypermobile, fancy word, is basically saying double jointed. And it's not always perfectly double jointed. These aren't the people that definitely always are the guys that are at the circus stretching the skin off their face. But in many ways, those are a good example of a hypermobile person. But these people can be people that are just more likely to open their hips up, their elbows. They're usually a little more double jointed than the average person. And what I think the research is showing, and now that I've actually seen it, I can't unsee it, is that these people, in addition to their skin being hypermobile, and we know that there's a significant subclass of this called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, but their vasculature is also hypermobile and it's able to be stretched. And the vasculature being able to be stretched causes further dysfunction when you think about the fact that the spike protein and COVID in general causes damage to the endothelium. So, and the endothelium is again the inside, the lining of the vessel. And then inside that endothelium, there is even kind of the perivascular space. And so all of these things get damaged in COVID. And when they get damaged, if your vessels to begin with are already floppy, more stretchy, and you can use very non-scientific words to describe them, then it seems that when you have damage to the endothelium, they're more likely to have further damage and collapse. And one area of the body is very unique, and that is the cross of the iliac artery, and this is the right iliac artery with the left iliac vein. And the left iliac vein passes under the right iliac artery. And interestingly enough, a lot of times I use arteries, I kind of talk to them as if they are almost like, you know, more non-boiled asparagus, while veins are more like boiled asparagus. They're very floppy. So if you have an artery running over a vein, and then that vein's architecture loses some of its stability, then you're going to probably have collapse. And that collapse is something called iliac vein compression. We classically called it May-Thurner syndrome. But it seems like a good bit of these people that are, first, hypermobile, second, have lower extremity symptoms on the onset of their long COVID, and third, have a significant amount of POTS and mast cell activation syndrome, or MCAS, that they have, when we do an MRI or MRV of their pelvis, what we find is that their iliac vein is compressed. And from that iliac vein compression, what they get is a lot of pelvic congestion. Pelvic congestion in females would cause erratic and more heavy menstrual cycles. It might cause urinary urgency, can cause pelvic pain, lower back pain. It can cause healing issues when we talk about surgeries. So all these things are adding up to be pretty significant when we talk about long COVID. And it explains a lot why hypermobile people, but I'm going to add one more additional person to that subset, and that is somebody who's athletic. And so I've wondered this for a while, why a lot of the patients I was seeing were athletic. And it seems that after thinking about it for a while and also asking the patients questions, a lot of athletic people also seem to be hypermobile. And it makes sense when you think about it. Why can somebody run faster or do things that you can't do? And a lot of it has to do, when we talk about a lot of the sports that we play, you know, swinging bats, golf clubs, running, a lot of those things are going to be better when you can stretch. I mean, if you've ever seen the guy at the end of the 100 meter race, when he's getting ready, if he can usually jump out of the roof, he's also extremely flexible. And the flexibility means that he's able to turn over his legs and also widen his gait in a way that makes him world class. So I think that's one of the connections we're starting to make. And it's in that subset of people that there is significant dysfunction, because a lot of these people, they're kind of not only their overall health, but their mental health is found in the ability to exercise. And so if you take that away from them, they are going to have a pretty hard time. And I think that's one of the more harder things to see in the clinic, because you usually in this kind of situation have somebody, for the most part, that it looks extremely healthy, that walks into the clinic and basically says, my life is miserable. Everything I do now, I can't do very long. And I really can't, you know, perform. And for the most part, as a physician, a lot of times you're sitting there going, I don't really see any pathology when I look at them. And so it's hard. And then also a lot of times when you actually run the typical tests that we have for things like cardiac dysfunction or respiratory dysfunction, those are going to be otherwise normal. First of all, they have a massive reserve. Usually they've worked that up. And so in some ways, their dysfunction is a little bit different than the dysfunction that you might see in somebody who barely can walk in the room. But they themselves also have seen a pretty dramatic decline in their overall health and their ability to basically participate with a reasonable quality of life. And given that, that's why it's so disheartening when they go to the doctor and they are told that there's nothing wrong with them. And because the reality is most of these people are very in tune with their body and they know something's wrong with them. So when we go back to that iliac vein compression, when we talk about these people that are hypermobile, some of the males that I've seen are cyclists, and cyclists also have had a history of kind of what we would call pelvic floor trauma leading to the probably breakdown of this, again, right iliac artery going under the left iliac vein and collapsing. And when that collapses, it causes dysfunction in terms of not only reperfusion or blood getting back to the heart from the legs, but the sensor that's there, because it's a big vessel, also activates all kinds of other issues. And those would be the reason that you get a lot of these tachycardia syndromes. You get these fainting. You get the inability to run without their legs being extremely weak. And so in many ways, a lot of the things that we look at, especially I look at in the lab here, is looking for things like thrombotic phenomenon. Well, the funny thing about May-Thurner or iliac vein compression is combined with that, these people, because they have that iliac vein compressed and there's this tortuous flow through the iliac vein, and also there's lots of reflux, backflow, there's lots of pelvic venous congestion, it sets up a scenario for them to have lots of fibrin-type clotting processes. In fact, these people prior to COVID were at risk for DVTs, for big or PEs. They were the people that you would see that would be the, you know, great athlete that all of a sudden on an airplane throws off a big clot into their lungs. So it is not surprising that when we look at their blood in the post-COVID in the post-COVID diagnosis, that they also have these fibrin aggregates. And so it originally was kind of difficult to tease this out. And I will tell you, it kind of was hard because these people would usually get a little bit better on anticoagulants, antiplatelets, but either we would remove it or, and that it would come back, or they just never would really get back to their number one self, meaning like, you know, their original self. And it seemed to be to me that there was something additional going on, which kind of moved me to look a little bit further. And one of the people I work with is a cardiologist at Emory named Alexis Cutchins, who's very well versed in pelvic venous disease. And after talking to her, it makes a lot of sense now. And as we start to get something called MRV, which is basically an MRI of your pelvis that has a venogram on it to look at the veins of the pelvis, it's amazing how many of them have severe iliac vein compression. So all that to say, I think that's just kind of an update. And when we're trying to look at these, what I would call phenotypes or constellation of symptoms to put in kind of a box, not that I always do that, but it's helpful because when you think about these people that have long COVID, it's nice to kind of be able to understand where their problems might lie. Again, the COVID and the spike protein itself is the chaos causer here, but it can cause chaos in different people based on their, what we would call baggage they bring to the disease. And so with that, we will close out for today. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Bond, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.